you start the rundown, it has to be absolutely exquisite. Don't make it like a scale. Once again.
All over New York and the world, people are practicing their Chopin. That's true anytime, but it's especially true now as musicians gather to mark the 150th anniversary of Chopin's death on Sunday, October 17th. Chopin is an example of an immensely popular composer. Some of his melodies are so famous one doesn't even hear them anymore, who is also a musician's musician, especially for the pianists. For them, Chopin is someone who did a lot more than write beautiful melodies. Just ask Garrick Olson.
It's as if Chopin sort of and the piano sort of had a genetic receptor site for each other. In other words, pianos didn't know what they could do till Chopin came along.
Olson has recorded, over the last 10 years, virtually the complete Chopin piano music in 11 volumes. And he's due to come to New York on the 17th for a Chopin tribute at Alice Tully Hall. Olson says Chopin's contributions were not only musical, but digital, in the old sense of digital, meaning of the fingers.
He liberated the instrument. He made it breathe. He also liberated the human hand in relationship with the keyboard. There were other people who were moving in a similar direction to him at the same time, but nevertheless, he took it further than anybody else.
Both Chopin and Liszt introduced a different way of playing the piano.
Pavlina Dokovska, head of the Manus College of Music piano department, has been running the city's largest Chopin festival this whole year. By the time it ends in December, students and faculty of the Distinguished Music School will have played the complete works, piano pieces, songs, chamber music, everything.
When you read the writings of Chopin, he constantly was talking about suppleness, souplesse, like in French. This connection, the key becoming an extension of the finger. This would be an expression that he would use, facilement, facilement, easy, easy. The physical part of the performance should be totally effortless.
Back in the days of harpsichords and clavichords and then early pianos, generations of Viennese pianists had to learn to play with a coin on the back of their hand, so the hand would be absolutely sort of stable and almost motionless. By the time you get to Chopin, he even wrote that trying to even up the strength of the fingers of the hand actually flies in the face of nature, because one has to capitalize on its variousness and its weakness as well as its strength.
With his new insights into piano playing, and with some success in Paris, Chopin became the most fashionable piano teacher in the highest possible social circles. It was his piano teaching and composing which helped him bow out, if you will, of the virtuoso performing business, to which he was not particularly suited. Once he was able to concentrate on teaching and composing, Frédéric Chopin simply changed music forever. There had never been a composer whose own musicianship was so directly connected, so closely linked to his compositions. Chopin composed at the piano, and much of the time he improvised. "The other day," wrote a contemporary of Chopin in 1842, "I heard Chopin improvise at George Sand's house. It is marvelous to hear Chopin compose in this way. His inspiration is so immediate and complete that he plays without hesitation, as if it could not be otherwise." This gift, what his admirer Robert Schumann called Chopin's spontaneous genius, revolutionized keyboard music.
Let's take the Etude Opus 10, number 1. Many people have commented that this is like Bach's first prelude from the well-tempered clavier, only over 4 octaves instead.
Here's the Bach. And here's the Chopin.
It was considered to be virtually unplayable at the time of its creation because you had to play loud and strong and very fast and keep your hands stretched out at an interval of the tenth. I mean, people didn't write sounds like that before.
If the texture of Chopin's music was that of a melody over an accompaniment, there was no other composer who used it with such variety and to such great effect.
With Chopin, you start having accompanimental or left-hand figures for example, the D-flat Nocturne, Opus 27, moves freely within over more than two octaves, which gives a sort of a shimmering or a very open quality to the accompaniment, which then liberates the melody to sort of float on top of this wonderful sea of accompaniment in a way that had always been implied by everybody, but it never had been so successfully done.
There are, of course, those celebrated melodies, the product of Chopin's great genius for invention and the product also of his own musical passions.
Bach, Mozart, and the voice. This is what influenced him most. He would tell his piano students, don't listen to pianists, listen to great singers. And when he arrived, for example, to Paris, he was almost every night at the opera. He was absolutely enchanted by the human voice. He made the piano sing.
For a veritable feast of Chopin, check local listings, as they say. There is a lot happening on October 17th, the exact date on which Chopin expired, 150 years ago. Garrick Olson is part of a Kosciuszko Foundation extravaganza at Alice Tully Hall. Pavlina Dokovska is hosting a number of events in connection with the year-long Manus College Festival of mostly free concerts and masterclasses. And the pianist Cyprian Katsaris will be at Carnegie Hall that night for a recital called Chopin in Memoriam. Garrick Olson's recordings of the complete Chopin piano works are on the Arabesque label. The last word today goes to, of all people, Irving Berlin, who celebrated Chopin's legacy in his own way.
Chopin in pale moonlight will reveal all your charm.
For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko.
So give me velvet lights and sweet music with you in my arms.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.